A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast exists because of the paid members at DecodingTV.com. Currently on Decoding TV, we are covering shows such as Andor, but also She-Hulk Attorney at Law, as well as The Lord of the Rings of Rings of Power. Over on A Cast of Kings podcast, we're covering House of the Dragon and wrapping up our coverage of Season 1 with Kim Renfro. If you want to support shows like this one, become a paid member at DecodingTV.com, and you will get access to early episodes, ad-free episodes, and exclusive bonuses we'll make just for you. Thanks to everyone at DecodingTV.com that makes this podcast possible.
Freedom, independence, justice. We should just submit and be thankful. Just take what we're given.
Do I look thankful to you?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV, a podcast about television. I am David Chen.
And I'm Patrick Willems.
On today's episode of Decoding TV, we're going to be discussing Season 1, Episode 6 of Andor, entitled The Eye. Andor, of course, streaming right now on Disney+. But you know what, Patrick Willems, this episode's entitled The Eye. It is the second episode of television I've seen on a prestige TV show this week entitled The Eye. Season 1, Episode 7 of The Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power, also called The Eye.
Huh.
People just love that title, The Eye. They're just like, this is amazing.
Eyes are just all the rage in TV right now.
Yes. I imagine the people who wrote the title for these episodes kind of leaning back Antonio Banderas style in that gif and just being super happy with, oh, The Eye, such a beautiful poetic title. Unfortunately, someone else already thought of it. So,
and this probably happened like more than a year ago because the post-production timeline on these shows is so absurdly long.
Indeed, indeed. But anyway, we're going to be discussing, spoiling, recapping, reviewing Season 1, Episode 6 of Andor, The Eye. We'll not be spoiling anything from the future. But yeah.
Yeah.
That's what the plan is for today's episode of the podcast. You can find more episodes of the show at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. And find us on TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube at DecodingTV.
I also want to be clear, we will not be spoiling the Rings of Power episode called The Eye, because I haven't seen that.
Yes.
And I don't want to get spoiled, because at some point, I will catch up on that show.
All right. Well, you've heard it here first, folks. Before we get to this week's episode, let's get to a message we got from David over on YouTube. Of course, you can always comment on YouTube. Write to us at decodingtv@gmail.com. David writes, in reference to a topic we discussed last week about the extended universe and canon and what is technically counts as Star Wars canon.
Versus Legends.
Yeah. Legends, exactly. David writes, on the subject of Legends versus canon, for all the many, many, many stories in the extended universe, the origins of the Rebel Alliance were, to my knowledge, never explored very deeply. It was always just assumed that it was all sort of organized by Mon Mothma and Bail Organa, and that was it. In the new canon, especially with things like Star Wars Rebels, we learn that the Rebel Alliance was, in fact, an alliance of many different rebellions that had sprung up organically on various worlds oppressed by the Empire. The fully organized Rebel Alliance we see in Rogue One and the original trilogy had really only existed in that form for about 3 years. So when it comes to Dedra Miro's too random to be random comment, she's observing the spark of the rebellion, even if there isn't yet an actual unified organization behind it, end quote. So anyway, it's interesting to kind of reflect on like how, if I understand this comment correctly, fully depicting the origins of the rebellion is a relatively like recent development in Star Wars history. Is that something that?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It makes me wonder if, again, like I said before, I am not an expert on the expanded universe. I've read almost none of those books and comics. It was never a thing I was especially interested in. But I do wonder, especially like in the 90s, if George Lucas kind of had that, because, and to be clear, George Lucas did not like read and was not really involved in the majority of the expanded universe. Which is why some things in, like, movies he made actively, like, contradict it, because there's just so much of it. But I wonder if in the 90s he kind of had the pre-original trilogy, like, era of, like, the 30 years leading up to A New Hope, like, kind of blocked off, like, don't touch this, don't mess around in here, because I'm making the prequels and this is my area, so just go make up a bunch of wacky nonsense that happens after Return of the Jedi, drop a moon on Chewie, whatever, just this 30-40 years, this is my zone. Because it is funny, you'd think, like, as we're seeing on the show Andor, this is a pretty fertile ground for stories.
Yeah. He said, don't mess with the origins and the pre-episode 4 stuff, because one day there's going to be a guy named Tony Gilroy. He's amazing. He's going to make something called Michael Clayton. It's going to blow everyone away. You know, and like, no, he didn't know that at the time. But anyway, yes. So we're really grateful to have stories such as this one. Okay. Before we get to this week's episode, Patrick.
Are there more corrections? Did we get more stuff wrong? Did I mispronounce the name of a planet?
Undoubtedly, but we're not going to get into it this week. We're just going to dive straight into the episode. And you know what? I think to dive into this episode, we should listen to what we predicted might happen in this week's episode from last week. All right. So here is I asked you to predict how many people are going to die. What's going to happen? Here is a clip from last week's episode where you and I both predicted what was going to happen this week. Here we go. We're going to play the clip right now. Any guesses, predictions on how many people will die next episode?
How many people? I feel like saying like 3 is an easy number. Yeah. I will say, if anyone dies...
Nemec, right?
I'm not feeling good about Nemec. Yeah.
Mostly because that's the idealist, right?
Which one is going to hurt the most?
Which one is going to motivate Andor the most to become who we know in Rogue One? Right?
Yeah, so. Who knows? Yeah, maybe it'll be a situation where the heist goes perfectly, and I don't know, and then Vel betrays them and tries to steal all the money for herself, and turns out she's actually working with the Empire.
That would be a thing that could be a thing that happens. Who knows?
Maybe Darth Vader will show up and swipe it all and bring it back to Mustafar so he can sleep on a big pile of money.
Well, Patrick, you got that partially correct.
It wasn't Darth Vader. It was Sheev Palpatine who showed up and stole all the money for himself.
Somehow Sheev survived through this whole thing.
He does that.
Somehow he's alive. We obviously nailed the whole Nemec dying. You know, that was a thing that happened. Not in the way that I thought he would die.
I will say that was the thing. He was the one guy we both agreed was like, yeah, he's toast. Yeah. And yet the way his death ended up not feeling predictable ended up being so much more powerful and suspenseful. Look, this show, even when we kind of have a sense of where it might go, it constantly surprises me.
Let's talk about overall thoughts on this episode. Patrick Willems, what do you think of season 1, episode 6 of Andor?
David Chen, I thought it ruled. I thought
your technical assessment.
Yes. After I'm putting my many years of like film studies to work here, and my academic opinion is that this episode was freaking terrific. good television. No, I mean yes, it was really good, but watching this episode, I'm just like, oh, this isn't just like easily the best Disney Plus Star Wars show, or even easily, I mean, the bar there is relatively low, in my personal opinion. It isn't even just easily the best Star Wars thing since The Last Jedi. This is one of my favorite TV shows of the year, which is a thing I have not said about anything that has aired on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
This is extremely good. It feels wild that this is Star Wars, because I feel like Star Wars, everything since The Last Jedi, has mostly been a matter of like feeding us, like, you know, it's like, oh, here's like, just like listen to like a greatest hits collection. Like, here's the stuff you're familiar with. Here's like characters, you know, doing the stuff you expect to make you feel kind of good. And I'd like forgotten that Star Wars could be like gripping, emotional, like genuinely exciting television. Not exciting in the way of like, ooh, I wonder what cameo we're going to see this week. But like, like when it's get into the climactic action sequence, when, you know, with like ships like outrunning each other and trying to escape a meteor shower, I'm like, I can't believe how suspenseful this is. This is really, really good. Yeah, I think this is the best episode of the show yet. I at this point, halfway into the season, I'm like, I full on love this show. Yes. I'm so glad that I accepted your offer to podcast about it, because going into it, you know, we were like, who knows? Yeah. We hope it's good. And now I'm like, man, I picked a good one. And by that, I mean, you picked a good one to ask me to join you on. So, big thumbs up from me.
Plus one to everything you said. This episode was incredible. It was an all-timer. One of my favorite episodes of TV ever, I think. Not even just this year, not even just of Star Wars. Like, it was spectacular. And I tweeted this morning about how dazzled I was by this episode. I'm not joking, Patrick. I literally just finished watching it. Like, we hop on, you know, right after we watch it in the morning, and then we record this episode. And DecodingTV.com paid members get it early, our reactions early. And so I'm fresh off of watching it. Tears came to my eyes. I'm not exaggerating. Like, I had tears come to my eyes when Andor's like flying into the eye. It's so beautiful, and also, as you said, suspenseful and like gripping. And I'm like on the edge of my seat as to what, like, anything could happen. Like, any one of these characters could die, as the episode has demonstrated, other than Andor, of course. And I was so dazzled by this episode. It's just an incredible piece of work. It's everything you want in a good heist episode, basically, right? And after two episodes of build up, it was like, this thing had better deliver, and it delivered. Like, it had a high bar, and it really delivered. There's like so many amazing moments, and so like a lot of unpredictable choices. Like, we obviously did not predict like these would be the characters that would survive at the end, and how, certainly we couldn't have predicted how they would survive. All the decisions feel organic. They all feel like, oh, that makes sense. Like, that, I buy that based on what we've seen in the show. So I loved it. I thought it was so, so good. And somebody tweeted in response to my tweet this morning. They basically said, well, I'm going to hold out, you know, I'm going to hold out and see like how, like, a lot of people loved the first two episodes of Obi-Wan too. And I'm going to hold out and see how Andor plays out. Here's the thing.
I got the same thing. I also tweeted about how good it is. And I got all these people being like, yeah, but is it really good? Because Star Wars has like, I don't want to watch another Star Wars thing because I've been let down before. I'm like, dude, I didn't love the other stuff either. Like, I'm on the same page and I'm telling you this is great. Like, what more do you want?
If they had just released a 90-minute film that was these last three episodes, like episodes 4, 5, and 6, that would have been like, imagine if like nothing else came out. It was just like, this Andor movie hits. Here's a little Andor prequel that hits Disney Plus. And that was it. Like, you and I would be super happy with that. We'd be like, we watched it. It's like, hey, that was a really cool story. Cool story, bro. You know, like, that'd be really well done. It is worth it just to get, even if it completely craps the bed from this point forward, which I don't think it will, but even if it goes bad from this point forward, it's still worth watching through episode 6. That's how good it was. That's how good it was. Okay?
I mean, this could have been a season finale.
Yeah.
And I would be fully satisfied. I would be like, man, terrific. It'd be like,
okay, great. We got six great episodes of Andor. This is amazing.
Because also, like, the way this ends, like, I mean, we're already spoiling stuff. I genuinely have, okay, you mentioned early in the episode, like, we're not going to spoil anything in future episodes. Not only do I not know what happens in future episodes, I can't even begin to imagine, because the way this ends on this, this great shot just pulling back from Stellan Skarsgård, yeah. Luthen Rayl, just in his back room, just laughing,
yeah.
like this like relieved laughter, like, oh my God, it worked. We did it. This is like this, you know, it looks like this rebellion is actually like moving forward and might like turn into something. And then it just, it ends. And I'm just like, I have zero idea where the story is going from here, where Andor is even headed, like what planet. And if that were just, if I didn't get any more Andor for the next year and a half.
Or forever. Like, I'm not saying I'm not looking forward to more Andor, because I'm really psyched for more Andor. But, like, if this is where it ended, it would be like, that was worth it. That was worth the whole journey for me.
I mean, I feel spoiled that we get six more of these.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Okay. So, let's get into the episode. We're basically going to divide this into kind of three sections, right? There's the pre-heist, and then there's the heist, and then there's, like, a few things that happen post the heist. Okay? So, pre-heist, we are introduced to several more characters, and the whole time I'm wondering, like, why are we being introduced to these characters? And then, of course, they play a key role in the heist itself.
And again, I know we've already talked about how Tony Gilroy has mentioned that there's like 197 speaking roles in this mm-hmm. season or something like that, but it is wild how many characters keep getting introduced in like every single episode,
yeah.
and then I'm just like, and right when you think it's like, don't we have enough people here on Aldani? And then it's like, nope, these are pretty compelling people too. Oh, I see why you introduced them. Yep. Kind of necessary.
Yeah. Every character is like necessary for the plot in some way, you know? And it's great. So yeah, we meet this character named J-Hold, who is played by Stanley Townsend. And he is Lieutenant Gorn's boss. And he also has a boss named Colonel Pettigar. And the idea is that Colonel Pettigar is visiting the base, and J-Hold needs to impress him and kind of come off well so that, you know, they can get off this stinking planet, as J-Hold says to his wife, who also gets a named role. Robota, I believe, is her name.
Yeah. And their son.
Yeah. Yeah.
We meet a whole new family of characters here. And right away they establish the dynamics like really, really clearly.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, you've got J-Hold there struggling to put on his belt for his kind of like official kind of ceremonial uniform, and his family's getting all dressed up, and like his son is miserable. He feels sick. his dad has no sympathy. He's just like, look, You've got to present yourself well. You've got to come to this event, because if this goes well, we can finally get off of this dumb, miserable, like, backwoods planet we've been assigned to.
Yeah. It's interesting, the idea that you would never think of it, or not never think of it, like, probably you thought of it, but this idea of, like, that there's some assignments for the Empire that are more desirable than the others, right? And I'll say, Aldani, as it's been depicted, I can understand why people would not want to work there. No, it's incredibly beautiful, but it seems gray all the time. I don't think we've seen the sun a single time. Maybe a little bit, you know, during one of the early scenes.
And it's also just mountains around. It's not like there's like a, you know,
there's not like
thriving.
A city or, yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, I think I was wondering, and I'm sure in peripheral Star Wars stuff, there's examples of this, but have we met family members of Imperial officers before?
I'm not sure. We've obviously met Mon Mothma's family.
Oh yes, but like this is just a regular like Empire guy, like in the military. And here we've got like his wife and his son, and like he has a home life.
Yeah,
and we usually point to Krennic, Ben Mendelsohn from Rogue One, as like the most kind of like normal guy Imperial person before, because usually, you know, Imperial officers are just these like slimy, like boot licking, like Nazi type guys who you can't imagine they have any lives outside of work. And here, you know, it's a guy, and he's got a kid, and he's telling to like get dressed up and stop complaining. And so again, we've said this in every single episode, but I love seeing this like this new perspective on the Empire.
Yeah, yeah. You know, his wife kind of takes a dig at him. He's like, yeah, these clothes are all compressed. And she says, perhaps it is you who has expanded. And it's like, she gets a little dig in him. And it's like, hey, Robota, go easy on him. He's having a challenging day. It's about to get harder. Okay.
Well, I think she deserves to get that little dig at him.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, we do see him, kind of talk very condescendingly about the Donnies to his boss, Colonel Pettigar, right? And
he's also, I'd like to point out, a member of the Empire, which are bad guys.
Yeah, okay, I see. So that's another reason why we should look down. We should not be on his side.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting. What's interesting about introducing Pettigar as a character who is in Andor the series for about like 10 minutes total of screen time, I think, before he's unceremoniously killed off, is this idea that the show is really going heavy with, that it's middle managers you need to please all the way down, basically. Like, no matter where you are at the Empire, even Darth Vader had like bosses, basically, right? So
yeah.
Everyone needs to kind of please the next person up the line. Gorn needs to make sure J-Hold is happy. J-Hold needs to make sure Colonel Pettigar is happy, and so on and so forth. That's just the way it is. That's just the way life is in the Empire, and also in the world, in the universe. So.
Yeah. Also, the more of these people that we meet, I do sometimes think, man, if these guys ever meet Darth Vader, they must think he's so weird.
Yes.
Like yeah. Darth Vader exists in a totally different world. Mm-hmm. Like these are people who have never dealt with like Jedi
at
all, who've probably never seen a lightsaber.
Yeah.
And I will say it is as we learn a little bit like around the middle of the episode, it's very important that J-Hold's family is there. They serve an important role.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Patrick, I think early on in this podcast, I believe it was with our Andor episodes, I was noting like, what are some ways of getting good exposition out there? And I noted like having a toast is a good way of like having someone describe someone's life. Well, now we learn another good way of getting exposition out there, Patrick. You're giving a tour to somebody who's your superior, and therefore you need to summarize everything that's going on with the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we used to have thousands of Donnie show up for the eye, but now it's just 60. And they're talking so blithely about basically like eradicating their entire way of life. And sure, it's a sacred mountain, but blah, blah, blah. It's, I think, clearly a sharp dig against colonists, you know, imperial forces, and America, like how America treats indigenous people so carelessly and blithely. And it holds a mirror up to the country, basically.
It does.
I think this sequence does. But yeah, we do learn a lot about the Donnie's history, and we see them kind of walking along the path to get to the garrison. Spectacular kind of views of them walking and arriving. So, and I mean, the whole episode looks incredible. There's so many amazing visuals in the episode.
This looks
Vel and Cinta like going underwater to the dam, basically. And
when you can see the very first like meteors from the eye going overhead and like illuminating them.
It's cool that they thought of that. Oh, yeah, of course, something like that wouldn't necessarily just happen all at once. You'd get like little traces before it starts to happen, right?
Exactly. So. I mean, I think we'll talk more about visuals as this goes on, but this is an episode where it is funny that considering that this almost, if you step back and just like look at like the lineup of the Disney Plus live action Star Wars shows, this is the one that almost feels like the kind of – like it would be considered the kind of like cheap, like tacked on, like afterthought one. It's like, oh man, we've got a Boba Fett show. We've got these shows by like Jon Favreau. Oh, we've got an Obi-Wan Kenobi show. And then I don't know. There's like the dude from who got killed in Rogue One. He's got a little prequel show too. And like I know we've talked about how this is the first of the shows that's not shot on the volume, the ILM stagecraft. Like, I mean, like genuinely very impressive, like LCD screens that, you know, create these backgrounds and these sets. But this episode in particular looks so much bigger and so much more expensive than any of the other shows. The stuff that it gets into like later on, but it also it feels bigger and more expensive. But also, like a lot of the episode, it's still like, you know, it's like handheld camera work. It feels like I could not see the seams in almost any shots of like, okay, this is like this is what's real, or like the this is like a fully animated shot or whatever. It's it feels like everything feels so tactile. And even like, you know, when we see TIE fighters and those like the pilots like hopping into those as the meteor shower is like coming down in the background, I'm just like, wow, we've never really seen TIE fighters in this way before. Everything looks incredible. And so I huge shout out to Susanna White, who just like knocks us out of the park. This
She directed the episode.
Yeah, she's directed this whole set of three.
This whole set of three. And what I love about the look of it too is you really get a good sense of the geography of the location. Like you sense like, oh, they're going in through the back, and then they need to fly out this way. And there's lots of establishing shots. One of my favorite establishing shots is there's like a drone or helicopter shot of like these three soldiers running along the and it's like, that looks like a real place. You know, that looks like a real location, what they're doing.
And, okay. Yeah. I really, really hope that after the season of Andor, they do what they've been doing with the other Disney Plus Star Wars shows and have like a making of special.
Yeah.
Because I am dying to know where they shot this. I know a lot of I believe it's like the Scottish Highlands are like like doubled for a lot of just you know the natural environments, but the garrison it looks almost as if there was like an existing structure there, like a dam, and then they like built onto it, because there are no like really obvious green screen shots. You've got like, it's like, oh no, this is just, it looks just like a real location. It is shot like a real location. They establish the geography of it so clearly, and we see it from so many different angles that it's like, oh right, here's the top of it. Here's the entrances. There's the tower. Here's how everything connects. Here's how they get around. We get it all as if it were just a real place that they were filming at. And it is genuinely very impressive.
I agree. It looks amazing. Okay. What else happens in the pre-heist section? We get some more kind of hints about like what Vel's role is. She kind of goes into the base with Cinta, and they place like a signal jammer, right? Near the communications that they then activate later on.
Yes.
And
we also get at the beginning, we get a little more chat with Nemec and Cassian. Because, you know, Nemec, the, you know, being kind of new to, getting heisting. His hands dirty to heisting. Yeah. He couldn't sleep the night before while, you know, Cassian is like, you know, it's like a job for him. He's, he knows how to handle this. And again, you get more of Nemec being like the true believer, his manifesto, his philosophy about, you know, just about the empire and all of that.
Yeah. And Andor says to him, you'll be fine. You'll sleep when it's done. And then when I heard that, I'm like, does he mean sleep, like dead sleep? Which turns out was what he meant.
Yeah. We also learn that Taramin used to be a stormtrooper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And which, you know, explains why he's so good at kind of like leading them when they're practicing their drills.
Yeah. He's like very familiar with like what the protocols are, basically.
Exactly. Right? So, and Cinta, we learned that who is described as being like
the toughest of them. Yeah.
Exactly. That her whole family was killed by stormtroopers.
Yeah.
I mean, I like all of these characters. Cinta, I'm still very interested in because we've kind of spent the least amount of time with her. We get some very nice, like, quiet moments in this episode, like with her and Vel. And then, of course, at the end, she stays on Aldani. She's there when the rest of them are either dead or gone. And so I wonder, what's she up to now?
Yeah, that was an open question for me, because the thing is, she joins the Imperial Guards and also the Donnies as they're watching the Eye. She kind of walks down there. But everyone's already seen her face. Like, they know that she is a criminal. And so I was a little surprised that she went down there in an Imperial outfit. I thought she might change and try to like blend in with the Donnies and become part of the, you know, or maybe that she was a Donnie and that was going to be her story. But maybe. She goes down there in the Imperial outfit, if I recall correctly. So that yep. was kind of like, huh, I'm kind of curious how that's going to end up. But anyway, okay. Anything else in the pre-heist section before we get to the heist itself? I do want to say there was a really amazing shot of this security guard kind of doing his thing, and then you see Vel like running away in the background looking very suspicious. And I was like, oh, what an oblivious security guard. That guy's completely incompetent. He has no idea what's going on even around him. I had that thought come into my head, which might be a thought that is subverted later on in the episode.
I mean, in the pre-heist stuff, we get like the main team of, you know, Cassian, Terramen, Skeen, and Nemec. They're like at first dressed as Donnies with like the robes, and those are over than their Imperial uniforms. Yeah. And they just come in as like just another squad, just sort of escorting the Donnies in, and like they've got it all worked out pretty well, with Gorn especially, kind of like ordering them around, telling them where to go. And I really liked, I don't know if this is getting, I mean, I guess this is technically before the Imperial officers are like alerted to the heist, or until they've revealed themselves. But I really like all the stuff with Vel and Cinta. Just following them in, climbing up, you know, the ladder on the outside of this dam. But especially there's this moment when the squad on the ground is like waiting, and like Terramen is there with the radio, just like, you know, just like constantly like bugging Vel, like,
he's asking her to make a go no go call, because like at this point she could still abort and be like, we're out, I'm, you know, I don't like the way this looks, like, let's abort,
right?
But he needs her to give the call, and you can see the terror on her face. Like she's never done anything like that. Yeah, she's never done anything like this before. And it's a really amazing performance, because I just bought completely that she would be having difficulty making the call, right?
It's the kind of really human moment that we're just not really used to seeing in Star Wars, that someone on a mission just freezes and is like and it reaches the moment of no return, and then is just, you know, and hesitates, because, you know, this, by saying this word, this might mean they all die. And and obviously she's, you know, she does say let's go, but just that little like 20-second moment there, I thought was like, it's representative of the kind of care that is put into the show that really does make it feel different than what we're used to.
Agree completely. So great work by Faye Marseille, I believe is her name, who plays Vel. Just a wonderful moment in the episode.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, before we move on, Patrick, you want to let people know where they can find more of your work on the internet if they're enjoying this podcast?
Absolutely. If you want more of me talking, me discussing media in video form, you can subscribe to youtube.com/PatrickHWillems. And then you can get my my less intelligent, more tossed off brief thoughts on social media. And follow me on various places at PatrickHWillems.
All right. And of course, If you're enjoying this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com, you may also enjoy A Cast of Kings at acastofkings.com, where we're covering House of the Dragon, season one. And you can become a paid member of Decoding TV and support both podcasts over at decodingtv.com. Patrick, let's get to the heist itself. The heist begins.
The squad, the unit, escorts Jay Holden and Pettigar into the garrison, and the doors close, and we begin.
All hell starts breaking loose. I felt a little, you know, my sympathies was with Jay Holden a little bit, because he's got a boss to impress, you know? And I'm just like, the whole time I was hoping that Pettigar leaves before this whole heist happens, because like Jay Hold must be so stressed. Because I have been in that situation so many times in my life where I have a presentation for a boss or something like that. But of course, no, it takes place in the worst possible way imaginable for Jay Hold's career, I think.
I like this recurring thing throughout this podcast of you being like an imperial sympathizer like, well, you know, Jay Hold and Cyril Karn, sure, they might be members.
They might
of,
like, be a, responsible for mass atrocities. You
exactly.
Know? They might have had a mass atrocity here and there on their CV, but.
Right. They're members of a fascist regime and stuff like that. But, you know, they're having a tough time at work, and we should feel bad for them. I'm just teasing you, I know you're teasing me, and
I should be teased, and that's fine. I do think that the show tries to make you sympathize with all the characters, though. I do think that's something that the show
it
like.
Does.
Why introduce? I guess you know, introducing Jay Holt's family it serves a plot function in that. How else could they force Jay Holt to do anything, right? But I do think that having him have a family does make him more sympathetic. I will say this too. It honestly reminded me. I've been doing this rewatch of a television show called Gangs of London. Have you seen Gangs of London, Patrick Willems?
I still haven't. I love Gareth Evans, and I've been meaning to watch it. I just watched the trailer for season two, and was like, man.
Oh, did you? So the red band trailer for season two is like one of the most hardcore, violent, gory trailers I've ever seen in my life.
Like, it's no one of the most brutal, like, 2 minutes of anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's incredible. Anyway, you have to watch Gangs of London season one.
Yes.
Okay? I'll try to be very non-spoilery about what I'm about to say, which is just that in Gangs of London season one, at one point, you're introduced to an elite kill squad, right? And the show spends a lot of time like introducing you to these two members of the kill squad that are like husband and wife or like romantically involved, and you kind of follow them through their daily routine. And then it's like, it's kind of this thing where you're like following them through the daily routine, and then, oh, they get a call. It's time to go kill squatting. And it's like, oh, it's surprise. I thought they were just a normal couple, but they're actually part of a kill squad. In Gangs of London, it is very, very over the top because these characters in Gangs of London, the show, are like inflicting these horrible things on each other all the time. And then so to have it be like, oh, I love you, blah, blah, blah. Okay, now let's freaking like cut this guy's throat. It's just like really almost comical how discordant it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I still appreciated that they're like, hey, we're giving you a little bit of background for these characters that would otherwise be completely just kind of two dimensional, almost faceless characters, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what Andor is so good at doing is it gives you the texture of these people's lives a little bit before it snuffs out these people's lives. Like it lets you like have a little bit of detail before it kills people.
Yeah. I totally agree. And also with like the Imperial stuff, it feels like it's very interested in like the idea of like, what is it? The banality of evil, mm-hmm,
banality of evil. Yeah.
Yeah. About like, oh yeah, these are not all like, you know, monsters stomping around like murdering people, not a bunch of like inhuman, just like evil things. It's like, oh no, these are just people doing like at what to them are just regular jobs, in service of something that is evil. And because usually when in Star Wars, you know, when we see Imperial people, you know, it's like Tarkin or whatever,
Tarkin, yeah.
A guy who's or Palpatine. It's just like, oh no, there's no humanity there. They're just like evil space Nazis.
Yeah. On last week's episode, I said that we all know how heists are supposed to unfold. And I question whether Tony Gilroy would like completely upend what our notion of a heist would be in this episode, right? I don't think he did that. I don't think he did that. Because what I said last week was the heist is going to happen. They're largely going to get away with it. Something's going to go wrong during the heist. Maybe some people will die, but like they will eventually succeed. Like that is what a heist is. That's most 99% of heists are like that. And I was like, I wonder if he's going to subvert that formula. He didn't subvert the formula, but there were still many surprises. And they start with this opening scene of the heist where they get Pettigar and J-Hold and his family, like they're capture them. Pettigar whips out a gun and points it at Nemec, and he's like, let the boy go, which is like, again, Patrick, it's like, hey, this Pettigar guy, he might have annihilated entire – he might have committed genocide at some point, but he's like, let the boy go. He's like, you can keep me, you know, but you can let the boy go.
Also, a key thing we've got to mention here is that J-Hold's, like, I don't know, 10-year-old son has a gun pointed to his head. Yeah. And in Star Wars, we don't tend to see the good guys, the old Galactic Rebellion, point guns at children's heads. Like, if you walked into the scene and saw this, it would absolutely seem like the rebels were the bad guys.
Yeah. Totally. And he takes out a gun and he's like, let the boy go. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my, this is how Nemec's going to die.
Yeah.
This is how Nemec's going to die. Like, because
Nemec
you
is
and
also scared as soon as this happens. He's like, no one's ever pointed a gun at me before.
He's shaken. He's shaking. It's like, oh, this is, and you and I called it. We're like, this is how Nemec's going to die. Cinta freaking comes in, kills Pettigar immediately, just not even, doesn't even stutter. There's no confrontation. Just boom, he's dead. Which is like, okay, the first shock of the episode, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, wow, I'm stunned. Did not see that coming. And then they take J-Hold away and they say, you're going to take us to the vault. And he says, he's protesting all over the place. He's like, I can't unlock the vault. I need a signal from the blah, blah, blah. Like, this plan is terrible. This plan is effed. You guys are never going to succeed. And then there's a moment when, like, the crew kind of separates, which I think is probably the last time they see each other.
Yeah.
Or some of them see each other. But anyway, they take J-Hold away, and they take the rest of the crew to, I guess, the bridge of the garrison is where they, I think, it's they go, right?
Like the command room.
Yeah, the command room.
The one that has all the comms to the – oh, my God. I should have the name of the base on me. What is the
– Kenzie, I think.
I think it was – it's like R. Kenzie.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
Al Kenzie.
Thank you.
Al Kenzie. Yep.
That's the place that has, like, you know, the military support, that has the TIE fighters.
Yeah.
And then up there, and one thing I did like was
they brought S&M gear with them, like they strap it to people's faces. It's
like a set of matching like gags for the but also again it's the kind of thing where it's like, oh, they're gags, but they're not just putting like, I don't know, like rope around their mouths or like handkerchiefs. It's like, oh no, these are Star Wars gags. But they like, again, the heroes of the show bind and gag innocent women and children. Mm-hmm. J-Hold's family, they get gags put on them. And
well, there is a moment when J-Hold says, you're just going to kill us anyway. And she says, and Vel says, because that's what you would do, right? You're projecting a little bit, J-Hold. Maybe you should work this out with your therapist.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, she does make the claim very believably that, hey, we just want the money. We don't want to kill anyone. We're not like you, basically.
Right.
You
know? Even though they did just kill a guy. it was that situation, but they also do right away establish like, oh, we will kill someone.
We will kill someone. Yeah, which is very useful for them.
If anything, maybe it was helpful that happened because right away, everyone knows they mean business. But yeah, so Cinta and Vel, they go up. They take people to like just tie them up in the command tower.
Yeah.
And the rest of the group take J-Hold down to like the basement. Yeah.
And then Cinta stays and guards them while – and then Vel eventually joins them down there.
Right? Yeah. After we do get a little moment with – you know, because it has been established that Vel and Cinta are an item.
Yeah.
And they're sort of like, you know – a little concerned, kind of saying goodbye to each other.
She says, are you going to be okay? Because, again, I don't know what's going to happen to Cinta. It feels like Cinta is screwed. Like, I don't know what is going to happen to her because it's not like Cinta had a great escape plan. It's possible that maybe in the original plan, before everything went sideways, that Cinta was going to join them on the ship, right? Like, I think that's possible.
Right, yeah.
But then everything went sideways, and so they had to change the plan. So anyway, they go down, and there's these guys like playing cards, or you know, the Star Wars equivalent of cards. I'm sure there's someone out there who knows what game they were playing. And I have to point out, at every single step of this whole thing, the heist is played out with hyper competence, and that's what you want to see. It's like competence porn. Like it's just everyone's doing, like the plan is good. Everyone's executing it at a really high level. I'm like, I'm loving watching it, right? Like the whole time. I'm like, maybe this thing's going to go off without a hitch.
I know. And it's one of those things where it's also, it's shot with it's shot in a very clean way where like, it's not like, the cameras are often handheld, but they're not like too shaky where they're just like, panning and everything and just like, and following everyone like very clinically doing, like doing their part. And you can always clearly tell what's going on. And, it's like, I mean, it's an obvious reference point for like, for a heist, but the way it's shot kind of reminds me of like Heat, how Michael Mann might do it with this, like this real skilled precision.
Yes. Great comparison. But I was particularly impressed when they go down. They basically pretend like J-Hold is there on official duty, and they get everyone to line up, and then they pull the – like they get everyone to line up so they make sure they don't have like weapons and everything. Then they pull the guns on them. They search them all. And but then they make their fatal mistake, which is – and I love that this comes into play, but – I didn't realize that their plan involved forcing the guards to actually carry the stuff. And that I think was probably, you have to physically transport all that stuff out of there somehow. But it feels like a huge weak point for the plan. You know?
I did think about this, but I'm just like, how else would they do it?
Yeah.
Like there's so much stuff to carry. These are all like little like gold pieces in these kind of like cylinders.
Yeah.
They're heavy. Like this kind of feels like the most efficient. I mean, what really screws them is just that the guy in that like command tower ends up tapping into their like radio frequency because also like he's like he loses the Alkenzi signal to them. And they like knock out the power to everything, but then he picks up the like he catches their little radio wave and is like, "What's going on? Something? This seems strange. I feel like let's just go check out the basement."
Yeah, and you get a sense that he has to travel like a long way to get down because obviously he's like at the top of the thing and they're at the bottom, and so they have to travel a long way to get
down.
You
see them running down a lot of stairs.
Yeah. But I'm a big fan of heist movies that acknowledge the weight of the cash that they need to carry. Like,
yes.
Other examples of this would be The Way of the Gun or Widows, the Steve McQueen movie with Viola Davis. Like,
great movie.
All these movies like acknowledge that carrying this much cash is hard, and they need to figure – like, that's actually like the biggest sort of risky point is like you're spending all this time moving this cash. But yeah, there's a moment when – I will say it was a little bit of a – this is like – one of my favorite TV episodes of all time, and I just finished watching it. But I was a little bit, minorly disappointed that there wasn't more of a workaround they had to do. Because the guy, the whole time, J-Hold is insisting, there's no way you're going to get this thing open. I only know the code to the gate. I can't unlock the thing. And then they just, like, blow it up, and it's just like, oh, it's a little boop, and then the things, like, unravel themselves.
It did look cool when they unraveled that.
It was so cool. It's so satisfying. The sound they make was so satisfying.
Again, everything looks and sounds awesome.
So good. But then I'm like, oh, that was it? That was the whole thing? I thought there was going to be, like, kind of a bigger thing they had to surmount, or it was, like, a thing they didn't account for or something like that.
Right.
But so that was a little bit kind of like a little build-up that I thought didn't fully pay off. But it looked cool. And then, of course, right?
Can I actually mention one thing that I think that I started thinking about during this stretch of the episode? It's interesting. So this is a show called Andor about Cassian Andor. He is one of only two characters who have like existed in Star Wars before this show. And in this episode, he is very much just a supporting character. He does not feel like – I mean, even though he's the guy who pilots the ship – out in the climax, he doesn't really feel like the main character or the hero for most of this. He's just a guy on the team. Like, he gets basically equal screen. Like, I mean, for a while, I was like, man, is Taramin getting like more screen time than Andor? It's interesting because like this Star Wars has always been this thing ever since the first movie, you know, with like Luke Skywalker on this classical hero's journey. It's about these like, you know, chosen ones and all of that stuff. The special people that save the galaxy on their own. And this is very much a show about a supporting character, about mm-hmm. just a guy. And even on his show, and this is in not a criticism at all. This is in, you know, many ways. I feel like this was a deliberate choice by the Gilroys, because Dan Gilroy wrote this episode, where he's just a member of the team. He's not the hero of the rebellion. And in this episode, and like, and the show, it is wild that considering the majority of the cast of this episode only showed up in episode 4, and he kind of like steps aside and let like Vel and Nemec are really kind of like the stars of this episode.
They, you can like, imagine a universe where like they are the protagonists of this whole thing, you know?
Right, exactly. Cassie is just the guy who's with them.
They're such well-drawn characters. You know, I'm like super attached to all of them at this point.
And, yeah.
Anyway, Gorn's down there running everything. He has a nice confrontation with J-Hold, who's like, you'll hang for this. And he's like, well, that would be actually a good outcome based on everything that's happened over the
after like
of last
7 years working for you.
7 years is working for you, you know, and it's like, ooh, rough. Around this time, we're also intercutting with the Donnies kind of doing a chant and around this fire. And I'm curious, like, I was kind of curious, like, was that going to, are they going to play into the plot somehow? But I don't think they do. I think, well, I mean, obviously the eye plays into the plot, but you just kind of, they're just mostly there for vibes, I think. And
good
then you
vibes.
See the Alkenzi base, like these people getting into the TIE fighters, like the tension is building, right?
Okay,
as to, like,
also,
they need to get out of here. Yeah.
And now the meteor shower, the eye is really ramping up. The sky is full of like these kind of like turquoise, like, you know, shooting stars. It's like illuminating everything. And watching these like silhouetted in the foreground, like pilots climb down into TIE fighters while the background is illuminated by this like turquoise sky. It's one of the most beautiful things I've seen in anything Star Wars. It's like it looks so good. And a thing I also just love watching the like, you know, I guess like the mechanisms of like, oh, how all the TIE fighters are like hooked up to this system. They're all like kind of like in a set. They all like fly out together. It's incredible. It is like the way things escalate is so effective.
I thought it looked really good. And, you know, they have obviously been building up to the eye for like 3 episodes. And you're like, oh, this better look spectacular. It did look spectacular. I liked how it looked. I think also they used it very artfully in the sense that it was you see a lot of – you probably see just as much people reacting to the eye as you see of the eye itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're kind of being judicious with their CG. They're like, hey, we can't show like 3 minutes of the eye. So we're going to show like 10 seconds of the eye and a ton of people reacting to it.
And we do get one like early – like when it's really like kicking in, this – a big wide shot.
One, that's all you need. But that's – it's kind of like – and then of course you also see it in the background when they're kind of – he's escaping the TIE fighters. Like that's great as well. But I thought basically it felt like they didn't have infinite budget to depict the eye. And they chose their shots very carefully on how they did it. And I thought they did a great job. So that's
yes.
kind of what I wanted to say.
And but nothing ever felt like – cheap. It still felt
yes,
huge.
Totally.
And but again, it just like at no point did it feel like it turns into a cartoon where it's like, oh, and now we're just in like fully animated like CGI cartoon world. It's it's usually like the camera is like focusing on the people, and this is like in the background.
So there is a firefight that breaks out back at the garrison because
that squad makes it down.
Karn 2.0 is super – like needs to figure out what's going wrong with the radio and all that stuff. He takes the squad down. What I loved was how they tried to kind of save it. They didn't break character. You know, Gorn was like, hey, this is a training exercise. Like, get the F out of here. You're not authorized to be here. And then he says to J-Hold, tell him to get out of here. And then J-Hold collapses. This is the thing. They shouldn't have made J-Hold move the gold, okay? That was their big mistake. He's clearly not necessarily – yeah, he's out of shape, you know? And I felt bad because he's like sweating profusely, and it's just like, guys, I don't know that you had to, like, J-Hold could have just chilled there, and then maybe he wouldn't have died at this critical moment during the heist. But anyway.
It is also, this is a Star Wars thing where we watched a man have a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
We've never seen that before.
Have we? You tell me, Patrick. You tell me.
No. People don't tend to have, like, if people die in Star Wars, it's because they get shot with a blaster or stabbed with a lightsaber. They don't have a real, just a regular, like, medical thing happen because their health is bad. Yeah, he just, like, has a heart attack and looks like he either passes out or dies.
Yeah.
And then our shootout happens.
Right, right. Correct. So then the firefight ensues. Gorn is killed right away. And that's when I knew, like, I think he's probably the second person to die in this episode. And that's when I knew, like, oh, they're playing for keeps. Like, we've set up Gorn, like, pretty well. I'm hoping Gorn makes out of it. He just had a nice little moment with J-Hold. I'm like, hopefully Gorn gets out of this alive. He's out, like, right away. And then Taramin and Skeen are kind of trapped. And then Andor has a kind of struggle with one of the officers, and Nemec comes in and kind of saves Andor's life.
The Andor thing is also pretty suspenseful. The guy is choking him, like, on the floor. Another thing we don't usually see, like, in Star Wars, if people get choked, they get force choked. They don't have, they don't get, like,
if
Anton
people have a heart
Chigurh,
attack, they get, like, they get, you know, force heart attacks.
Exactly. They're not laying on the floor while a person has their arm wrapped around their neck.
I think that was supposed to be like a big Nemec moment where he kills this guy, but I was more focused on how did he make that shot than like that the character moment myself personally, but still pretty cool that he kind of got Andor out of that situation.
Yeah, but also Taramin tries to run and make it to the ship and does not make it.
Yeah, so Taramin gets killed too. Skeen makes it, and then they take off, and Andor says, hold on to something, but I don't think he really fully communicated the gravity, so to speak, of that command. So he takes off, and like literally everyone goes flying backwards, including Nemec, who then is crushed by a pallet of the credits.
Yeah.
Which is brutal to see, and again, another surprise. And I was like, did not see that. Like, that would be how the character died, which is like basically kind of like – like an industrial accident kind of situation, right?
And it's also, we don't usually in Star Wars, like, things like shoot into, you know, like hyperspace really quickly and stuff like that, and everyone's like, fine. We rarely see the vehicles have like this kind of like physical force, like where like physics are an issue. Like, oh, wow, they took off so fast that people just like got knocked back.
Yeah, and so again, that was a surprise too. Of like, I didn't know that Nemec would die in that. Like, I thought Nemec was home free, and then all of a sudden he's killed last minute.
It looks painful.
Yeah,
it's he gets hit. I mean, he doesn't die right here, but he gets.
They do like a Pulp Fiction like inject a thing into his heart to keep him alive, kind of deal.
Yeah, it's like they call it like a med stick or something like that.
Med space or something. Med spike. Yeah.
Yes. Basically just to like kind of revive him, like Batman in the climax of the Batman, because it's green, this section is so good. It's so now they're in the air, they're flying. TIE fighters.
I just want to say I love that there's like a brief little shot of the command center, and you see J-Hold's family still alive as they're flying off, and like I love that it kind of puts you in their perspective, and you're like wondering like what are they thinking at that moment?
Yeah.
Like they're probably being like, oh, it's over. They don't know that J-Hold's actually dead or in a bad state, probably. Right. Like what implications will these characters have in the remainder of the show? I'm very curious. Who knows? Just wanted to point. I love that little shot where they show the family of J-Hold.
Important. Yeah. Yes.
But anyway, go ahead.
And so then we really reach our climax where they're out. There's only four of them on the ship. And they have to escape the eye. They have to basically get through this meteor shower to get out into space while TIE fighters are pursuing them. And Cassian is going forward, but he's like, I don't have the calculations for how to get through this. Like, I can't.
Because the idea was that Nemec would do it. Like,
right. So then they stab Nemec with the med spike to just like revive him, give him energy to use his old little like hipster navigational device that he showed off in the previous episode that will that can calculate how they get out. And this is just exciting stuff. It's like, again, what we are used to in similar scenarios in Star Wars is Han Solo pounds on like the dashboard, and then it's like, oop, it's up and working, and then they zoom into light speed, and then they're away. This is a different thing where it doesn't quite work that way, and they're like this guy who's at least his like he's like paralyzed from the waist down, and he's like barely alive, trying to do these calculations on this old machine that will tell them like where to go, and like the calculations pretty much say like climb, go straight up, and. And it's great. You're also out the window, like out the dashboard of this ship. It's just this bright, like amber meteor shower. And they manage to go straight up, like barely dodging the meteors while the TIE fighters explode spectacularly. And it is suspenseful and it's awesome.
And it's like classic Star Wars, I would argue. You know, it's kind of like when you think of Star Wars, you think of scenes like this one, in my opinion.
Yes. Right? This manages to be pretty much exactly what we think we want from Star Wars, but also done in a way where we don't exactly know what's going to happen and where it's just new enough that it feels really fresh.
Yeah. I am my mind is reeling. Like, the whole time, I'm like, Oh my gosh, the heist is so competently executed. Oh my gosh, Pedagar just died. Oh my gosh, Gorn just died. Oh my gosh, Tamarin, like, I'm just like, Nemec's dead. And then, oh, but they're going to take him to a doctor. Maybe he'll be okay. And like, the episode had so many like twists and turns. My mind was being blown like left and right. I was just like, and then so, Skeen says, hey, we should go take him to a doctor. But Vel doesn't want to do it because it's a deviation from the plan. And of course, we find out what the purpose of that opening scene was with Nemec, because Andor's like, no, we're going to take this guy to a doctor. So they go to the doctor, who has huge Maz Kanata energy, from what I can tell.
He looks like a similar race to Maz Kanata, but he's got four arms.
So yeah, that was, I was kind of like,
He's also Maz Kanata didn't. And he's way taller than Maz Kanata.
Yes. But he had kind of this similar like skull shape and color, and also like the same goggles kind of as Maz Kanata.
Just an awesome alien. Like, yeah. And this is the Star Wars stuff I love. Okay. Actually, this moment here, because I feel like in every other Star Wars thing, when they say, we got to take him to a doctor, and then it's like, oh, and the doctor is this character who showed up on one episode of like a cartoon years ago, or like, this is exactly the kind of part where in most cases we have been trained to expect this to be some Easter egg, some familiar character. And I like that. No, it's not one of those. It's just a cool looking alien with four arms. It is not a reward for having paid attention to other Star Wars.
Skeen and Andor are sitting outside the doctor's office, and they have a discussion where Skeen pitches to Andor, hey, I can't fly the ship, but I do know a place where we can hole up. It's 80 million credits. Let's split it, 40 million each. And the whole time, what was your experience watching this? Because the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, Skeen is testing Andor. That was my thing. Like Skeen and Vel had worked out a plan where Skeen's going to test Andor, and if Andor agrees, then like Skeen will kill Andor. That was kind of my assessment.
I thought that at first until he kept going, and it really became clear that Skeen is just a scumbag. Like when, you know, he reveals that he made up the story about his brother.
Some of the most chilling words of the entire episode, when Andor says, what about your brother, the Orchard? And he says, I have no brother. I'm just like, holy crap, like, this guy's a freaking, if that's true, this guy's a freaking sociopath, you know, like, chilling.
Right. But I, again, this is the kind of thing that I like about this, where it's like a, you know, reconfiguring our concept of, like, what the rebellion, what these rebels are. You know, in the show notes, you helpfully wrote down this line that the Skeen has, you were born in the hole and all we know is climbing over somebody else to get out, where it's like, yeah, like he hates the Empire, probably for other reasons if he doesn't have a brother. But also at the end of the day, he's like, things that my life has been so tough that I care more about, like, living comfortably myself than, you know, than any greater cause. And then Cassian just shoots him.
That was a shot. Did you see that coming? I did not see that coming at all.
No, it does kind of remind me of, like, you know, the very beginning of the first episode, just the thing of, like, oh, Cassian really, I feel like it's being quicker and quicker about realizing, like, sometimes it's easiest just to kill the guy right now, rather than dragging this out or, like, waiting to see where it goes. And I will say, this is going to be such a silly comment because it's not really important at all, but I could not stop thinking about it. In this scene, Skeen, played by Eben Moss Bachrach, the way he's lit and his face and the way he's sitting, he looks almost exactly like one of the criminals in the opening of the 1989 Batman movie, where there's these two criminals sitting around, like these two, like muggers, and then Batman attacks them. And there is one guy that looks, he looks so similar, and I could not stop thinking about it. I just want to mention this here in case anyone else watching this had this thought of, like, hey, he kind of looks like that guy from that one scene in Batman.
I'm sure we'll get tons of emails to decodingtv@gmail.com.
Hey, this is what the internet is for. Throwing out these dumb random thoughts he had to hope that maybe someone somewhere in the world had that same thought.
Someone will be like, I feel seen. I feel seen.
Exactly.
I feel Skeen? Okay, anyway.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm going to leave this call right now and quit this podcast forever.
Yes. So Andor kills Skeen. I think you correctly assess that he is thinking to himself, this is now a unpredictable situation that I need to retake control over, right? Like, he's just like, need to get out of this situation. So he kills Skeen. And I'm like, wow, if Vel and Skeen really were testing Andor, then the test has gone very badly. But he holds up the doctor and Vel, and the doctor reveals that Nemec is dead, died on the operating table, which I also did not see coming, because I'm like, if they took him to a doctor, maybe he's going to survive somehow. Like, that was the purpose of that. Nope, he's dead. And he has a confrontation with Vel where he says, hey, look, I'm going to take my share. I'm going to take the doctor's ship, right? Which I'm going to give you credits for. And I like he offers like 30,000 credits to the doctor's ship.
Yeah.
And he says, that should be twice what it's worth. And the doctor says, excuse me. Like, the doctor, he's getting held up with four arms and he's like, how dare you undervalue my ship? And he gives kind of the little necklace back to Val and says, like, give this to Luthen. We're done, which I also did not see. I thought, like, the next step would be the heist goes so well that he, like, joins Luthen's cause and they go off and have adventures and stuff like that. But he's like, nope, I'm out of here. I got what I came for and I'm leaving and that's it, right?
Yeah, I mean, the heist didn't go great. I mean, it worked, but it's not like he's probably not in the best mood. He's not feeling great about the past day of his life. I would bounce if I were him.
I don't think you and I predicted literally everyone dies except Vel and maybe Cinta, but Cinta's not in a good situation either, right? So
yeah, and I wonder if we'll see her again.
Yeah, I think it's very possible. But anyway, I just was like, okay, that didn't call everyone dying except Vel. Some at Andor's hands, you know, like some of them at Andor's hand. And that's kind of it. That's all we know. No, I know. We got the Coruscant stuff as well.
No.
Oh, yeah. What else?
David, you're missing the most important part of the episode.
What's the most important part of the episode, Kyger?
Because then, when he's saying to Vel, like, hey, I'm going to take my share and get out of here, she goes, wait, take this. here's Nemec's manifesto. He wanted you to have it. He's like, no thanks. She's like, no, he insisted. This is manifesto that he's been talking about for the past few episodes. And he's been talking about it to Cassian. And now his like dying wish for Cassian to take that with him, because this manifesto is basically, I'm assuming, what is going to radicalize him. And I mean, granted, he's already heard a lot of Nemec's ideas and stuff like that, but I think him getting this little handwritten book is extremely important in terms of his overall arc.
They did do a little insert shot of the handing over, which indicates how important it is, because, you know, they didn't have to do an insert shot of that. But
yeah. So I'm assuming that the next three episodes are mostly going to be about Cassian chilling on some other planet, maybe on vacation, just reading the whole book. And then we'll just hear voiceover of just him like narrating the whole manifesto.
Uh-huh.
That'll be like their budget saving arc. And then the following three, he'll come back and he'll be like, never mind, guys, I'm on board. That was a really good book. Mm.
The next three episodes are going to be real thinkers, you think?
And exactly, then
And then we're going to end with a big action, climactic action scene.
Yeah, it's just going to be like a three-episode, like, poli-sci course.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, well, we'll see if that's right. We'll see if that's right.
I mean, I bet that'll be, like, probably – it might go the way of, like, my Darth Vader theory. But we'll see. I'm betting big, and maybe this will pay out.
We go to Coruscant. And news of the hit on the Aldani garrison has spread throughout the galaxy. It is perceived as a major rebel attack, as somebody at Luthen's place of business describes it. We get a scene with Mon Mothma. She is talking about the Gormans in the episode. And earlier in one of our podcast episodes, we theorized, or not theorized, but I guess speculated based off of somebody's email that or comment that the Gorman massacre might play into Mon Mothma becoming a, you know, rebel leader. So another Gorman mention here. And Senator Dow is also mentioned in Mon Mothma's speech. But then everyone's like, oh my gosh, did you hear about this? I guess it was such a big deal. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it would cause that reaction. Like, I guess some of the officers died, right? There's a big firefight, so like, probably like half a dozen to a dozen Imperial officers died.
It was a big heist. It was a big heist.
It's like if a bank robbery took place in Seattle, no, it would never happen. I guess, but would it cause an official function to everyone be like, oh my, did you hear about this bank robbery? I guess because a bunch of people died, and also technically it's like a rebel attack. It's not like the Donnies just randomly decide to sweep through and take them out. It's like a political act has occurred, right?
Yes. And also, like, they stole, like, Imperial payroll. Mm-hmm. And it was a strategic rebel attack that also stole a ton of money. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw.
Didn't they have, like, an FDIC equivalent in the Star Wars universe? All the, you know, Robert De Niro and Heat's like, don't worry, we're not taking your money. All your money's insured by the government.
Maybe. Know? It's possible. I mean, we do check over and see like Dedra Miro as like everyone's rushing, out to the meeting room. Yes.
Major Partagas says, I want every star sector and planetary emergency retaliation plan ready for presentation by midnight. And again, Patrick, I know I come off like an Imperial sympathizer here, but been there, man. Been there.
So
where it's like
what
the boss
saying,
is like something has happened, and the boss is like, I need your plans by this time, and it's gonna mess up whatever plans you had. Like, tell your wife, tell your children, you're not gonna be coming home tonight. You know, like, that's
David.
Yes.
So are you saying that Amazon is like the Empire?
I don't recall naming any company at all, Patrick, if I recall.
Okay.
You know, I don't think I said the name of any company.
You've worked at multiple companies in your life.
I've worked at so many companies. So
okay.
I could be talking about literally any.
I would never want to put words in your mouth.
Thank you. Thank you. I could be talking about literally anywhere. Literally anywhere. In the galaxy.
Yeah.
Anyway. So everyone's clearly taking it seriously. And then we get a final shot with Lufin learning the news. I guess he, even though he was like listening at the radio, like super intently, he went cold turkey and went all the way the other. He's not even reading the New York Times anymore. And then he finds out about it. He's like, it's all over the news. I guess he didn't even read the news that day to find out that his plan probably worked. So.
And then, you know, he just walks into his back room to have a good laugh. Mm-hmm. And then a thing that I was thinking about in the scene, I rewatched the scene right before we recorded, and was listening to Nicholas Britell's score here. And I'm like, oh man, like the score at the end of the episode and then going into like the end credits. I'm like, this is all like synths. Mm-hmm. When have we ever heard like synth electronic like scoring in Star Wars? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not even like, it didn't even jump out at me like on my first watch. But I'm just like, it is wild how many things this is, how many different things this is doing than we're used to from Star Wars.
Yeah. What an episode.
What an episode.
Amazing. Amazing. Any other thoughts, Patrick Willems?
I feel like we've thrown in a lot of thoughts. I'm trying to think, were there any other moments or things like that that jumped out at me? No, I just genuinely want to know how, like, what they did for the location that of the garrison, how that was shot, built, constructed, what the sets were, because it was so impressive.
Here's my question, Patrick Willems. Where's Karn, man? What's going on with Karn this episode? Karn hanging out with his mom? When are we going to get more Karn? That's what I want to know.
When does Uncle Harlow show up?
Yes. Yes. Presumably we'll find out about that later. But anyway.
Yeah, because
we
have no idea what's coming in the next arc.
So grateful for this show. So grateful for this podcast where I, David Chen, can speak with Patrick H. Willems about Andor streaming right now on Disney+. Thank you so much for listening. You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter, TikTok, and YouTube at decodingtv. Until next week, Patrick Willems, thanks for chatting with me today, man. Really appreciate it.
David, such a pleasure, as always. What a good episode.
What a good episode.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.